Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys at a kitchen table talking about Bitcoin and the broader Bitcoin space. Though we may own some of the equities and tokens discussed on the show, it doesn't mean that you should own them too. It's important to do your own research and due diligence, and also understand that any money invested could be lost. Nothing we say is financial advice, and honestly, you shouldn't ever take financial advice from two guys at a kitchen table, regardless of whether or not there's microphones in front of them. Friends and enemies, welcome to a very special episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast. We are joined tonight by Sean Anstey.
Anstey. You got it.
Anstey. Sean Anstey, who is the CEO of Liquid Fintech Corp, a company we talked about on the show that Len was able to pin down, I think 2 weeks ago. Hey, Len?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so we're happy to have him on. Sean, how you doing, brother? Thanks for coming on.
I'm doing well. It's been a busy few months, and we're over the line and off and running.
That's outstanding, man. Why don't we do this? For people who don't know you or know about Liquid, why don't you give us a little bit of your background? How'd you wind up in the seat you're in now, and what are you guys doing at Liquid Fintech?
Liquid Fintech, yeah. So the background, how far back do we want to go? I've been in tech for a long time, like over 25 years, and I've been part of the whole internet phase. And I remember back then telling people, the internet's going to change everything. You don't get it. And people are like, why would I want to get email? I'll go to the post office. And, hey, what's old is new again, right? So coming into, and we did a lot of data analytics and other kind of projects, like big data center project, backbone carrier between Seattle and Vancouver and all over. So very familiar with it, that kind of networking. And then seeing Bitcoin, got it right away. It didn't take me long, more than just a few minutes. Like, oh, I get it. It's money for the internet. This is just a continuation of the revolution of the internet. That's all it is. That was in 2011. I should have mined more. I did mine some, but mostly really got involved in 2012. That's really when I and halfway through, and then poured it on. And during that time, I built out an industrial Bitcoin mine or smaller Bitcoin mine for a client. There was maybe like a whole bunch of miners down in Seattle and that kind of stuff. It's setting it all up. So we mined quite a bit, or at least they did for a while, and stayed in the industry. And then in late 2014, started a company called Blockchain Technology Group, which was to do with analytics, and we do compliance stuff, and we're very familiar with all of that. And then from there, we became a public company in 2017. We raised $3.5 million, then we followed by another $19.5 million, and we built out compliance software. We work with regulators. We're very familiar with that aspect of it. It's an uncomfortable spot for some Bitcoiners, but it is a necessary thing to deal with. And then in 2019, we acquired netcoins.ca with the help of my CFO. That's netcoins.ca, major Canadian exchange. Did about $195 million in transaction volume last month, I think it was announced, and growing quickly. So, and it's a compliance-first exchange. We just, I'm very pragmatic and very practical in the way we look at sort of our approach to how we have to deal with things. Certainly, even from the compliance standpoint, recognizing that things will change and things will morph. But I remember my days back in the internet where it's like, the internet's going to change everything, but we still had to address certain practical things. And lawmakers like, we should shut the internet down, we should do this, and we heard it all. And once, law enforcement got a handle on it, regulars got a handle on it, everybody kind of woke up, came around, it started to flourish. The same thing's happening right now. And, when we look at sort of compliance software and sort of that whole part of my background, the needs of an institution are very different than the needs of an individual. I mean, privacy matters and anonymity matters. That's where, Taproot and Schnorr, it's a nice pushback against what's going on, so there's more balance. But you also have to look at it from an institutional standpoint. If you want Wall Street to play, they're not going to play unless they have a way to meet the regulatory needs. And there's a very, very simple reason why. It's because the board of directors and the officers of the company, if they allow Bitcoin into their institution and the SEC or regulator comes after them and smacks them upside the head, they allow themselves to become personally liable. So no board of directors, no members ever say, yeah, I'll go ahead and bring it in here, because nobody wants to be personally liable for potential millions of dollars in a lawsuit. So those are the kind of things the industry is working through. Yeah, it's great to have memes that say, and Bitcoin fixes this, but there is actual practical work to be done. And a lot of it, unfortunately, has to be done with governments and legal. And it's morphing, though. So Bitcoin will change everything, and it will change the way the world is working, but it just won't be quite the speed that people think it will be. but it's happening.
Tell us a little more how you became the founder and CEO of Liquid Fintech Corp.
Right. So after the NetCoins acquisition in 2019, that was about midsummer, we inherited some great people. I put Mark Binns in charge of CEO as a CEO. He's there now. You can look him up. And I remained with the company as a director and probably the largest shareholder. And in September started, I just knew that, you know, Lightning Network's the next phase. It's what's going to catapult everything. We look at all these, you know, all these different chains. Oh, we got a bigger chain because there's bigger blocks, and our bigger blocks makes the network. It's still only 140 transactions a second. Who cares? That's not an engineering solution. An engineering solution is multiple layers of technology working together. Why? Because that's what the internet's built. And so there's a lot of history with that. So looking at saying, yeah, Lightning Network is the one you could see the best and brightest are working on it. Smart money's going towards it. And I like to play in those spaces where it's complicated enough where I can step in and bring value, but it's not quite yet mainstream, and you can sort of, and you can get ahead of the curve. And I like to always say, you know, you can be too early in tech and burn yourself out, but you have to be early, but you can't be late. And so the mindset that we have with Liquid and even with BIGG is we built out into the wave. And suddenly one day the wave hit and the money was flowing in. We were able to expand the team and grow, et cetera. The same thing's happening in this space here. We're seeing Lightning Network and everybody's lips a lot more and more. The technology is getting more mature all the time. And now there's a real opportunity for the Liquid as a team to bring value to the Lightning Network by tapping into capital markets and bringing real money. I mean, there's real money in there, but continue to bring real capital money into the space to create liquidity and deal with some of those issues there. So that's how I became CEO, because I founded the company, but that's when. And it's been an interesting couple of years. We did it all through COVID. We've got a great team, and very fortunate that, you know, people I've had success with in the past and other developers and people wanted to join and be on the quest.
Okay, so you said a couple things there. First of all, Sean, I don't know if you know this, but Len is actually the biggest big digital asset shareholder. It's not you. I don't know if you knew that or not, but it's actually Len.
I did. Excellent. Very good. Right.
So my question is, and we talked about this on our show a couple of times, Sean, because I think Lightning is a bit of a blind spot for us and for a lot of Bitcoiners, to be honest with you. We sort of speculated that the thing holding Lightning back is that there's some UI complications for most users. So I would assume you're working on that, but what else is it about Lightning that you sort of said you find it as the sort of the Goldilocks zone? You're there early enough that you're not going to burn yourself out, but also at a phase where you can, like you said, develop into the wave. So what is it about Lightning specifically that you guys are really seeing that maybe some other companies, actually I say maybe, but it looks like a lot of other companies are not?
Yeah, for sure. I don't think a lot of the companies have been in the space a lot. We do see a lot of companies in the market, public markets, that some of them are really good and some of them great management teams. Some early on in 2017 didn't deserve to be there. They were just riding the wave. But so from a Lightning Network standpoint, I mean, we look at it, it still has a ways to go with the UI. And I don't know if this generation of developers is going to solve that problem. I think as more companies come into the space that are much better at UI and putting that together and the marketing aspect will solve that. And we intend to work towards that. But right now we're seeing a lot of the complicated back end stuff being solved in terms of liquidity, channel rebalancing, all these things that are just very fundamental to the plumbing of how you create another layer of technology. And part of this gets back to our philosophies of how we see Bitcoin, but we see the space there. How do you scale the internet? You scale with multiple layers of technology. How do you scale Bitcoin? You scale with multiple layers of technology. You've got RSK for smart contracts. I like the guys, Diego and Gabriel and Ruben, they're the great guys. From Argentina, they've done an amazing job and continue to scale that out. Whatever you do, don't go drinking with them. They're just, you know, it'll be 4 a.m. and you're just like, wow, what's going on? But wonderful people, and we continue to work closely with them. But Lightning Network's right at that point where you can start to see that inflection where the fundamental plumbing has come along, and it's about to, over the next six to eight months here between this year, I think a lot of issues are going to get solved and continue to fade away. I've seen this before throughout my career. So it's one of the things I've seen it before, it's happening again. The to that end, it allows you to truly scale into the millions and billions of transactions. Once the network is big enough, once it hits an inflection point of, you know, that Metcalfe's law, where there's enough people on it, enough value, then it's really going to take off. And you're starting to see that upper curve now, and it will probably accelerate faster than we think, just because everything accelerates faster these days, and it just continues to go down that path. So.
Yeah, the layered approach that is available to us, like the rootstock that you mentioned, is fantastic. And as a Lightning node owner, I really want to touch base with what you're doing with your company. So if you could tell us a little bit about the products and services that Liquid offers, and if you could elaborate how you intend to bring the Lightning network to institution and perhaps even the greater masses. I'd love to know about that.
Right, for sure. So for, you know, phase one, we like to call ourselves a liquidity service provider. We have a platform called Liquid Money. It's actually going to run under LQWD.tech. It's a platform as a service initially, so you can spin up a node as a service. We'll compete with Voltage and a few others, but we're also using the platform for ourselves, consuming our own product, and we intend to take as much of our Bitcoin as we can and put nodes and payment channels all over the world and try to really establish a serious footprint and bring in more capital from the public markets to put it to work and continue to earn that yield on there. So we have the ability to earn off, certainly off the hosting aspect of it and the footprint, but almost more important, especially over the next number of months here, is how big of a footprint we can make and how much more liquidity we can add to the pool. That's phase one for our product lineup. And we'll continue to build out. We have other products in the hopper that I won't disclose yet, because we can't disclose it yet, but they are related to liquidity and assuming that and working with other, you know, wallet providers and what have you to create additional liquidity. And to that end, so in terms of institutions, the way our platform's set up there, you know, we're a point where they can contact. We do know certain exchanges and companies in Canada that we'll be working with or we'll be looking to work with as we bring it forward here. So one of the things that happens as a public company is the fact that we have regulators, we have an auditors, we have a board of directors, all these things that are, you know, effectively looking over your shoulder. When you go to an institution, they take you a lot more serious because you are a serious business, and it does open a lot of doors. So that, you know, they know they have somebody's neck they can ring if something goes wrong. Effectively, that's what it gets down to. But it's so that we're going to leverage that position of respect that we have on those that aspect there, and certainly our history, and continue to work with other companies. So early days,
so
but
sorry, Sean. The question I have for you, I guess, is and you brought it up a few times. I know Len and I talk a bit about regulatory capture for companies like yours and the moats you can build, but also some of the struggles you might have. So what, you know, if you can, what I know Robert's rules probably limit some of the stuff you could say, but what are you really dealing with as far as regulatory hurdles for setting up something like this? Because in the past, I've heard whispers on Bitcoin Twitter about the money transmission angle, for example, and the licensing required to do something like that with a node or a Lightning node. So what are you guys looking at specifically? What are the biggest jumps that you're, you know, that you still have in front of you?
Yeah, certainly money transmission is one that's sort of come up there, but you know, from our background, my background, especially in dealing with the regulators and what have you, we want to be able to use our position to educate them that, you know, a node is not necessarily a money transmitter. It's merely just passing a packet effectively from node to node to node, very similar to how the internet works. You know, there's all kinds of points of presence all over the world, and your data gets passed between all the different providers till it lands where it is. You aren't necessarily the point that's actually transmitting the money. And so as long as we make the differentiator and we educate, then we can continue to protect our industry, because we don't want that sort of fundamental aspect to fall under kind of regulatory. It shouldn't, in my opinion, it really shouldn't. And ultimately, it'll be the money transmitters, it'll be the wallet providers, the exchanges, whoever wants to hook into it from an actual, if they're custodying end users' wallets and stuff like that, then they're going to have to comply whatever rules are there. But nodes and payment channels that are just set up there, I think in my opinion, it won't fall into that because of the way I just described it, where it's really just passing data. You're in the middle between the endpoints, right?
And just slightly changing gears here, we recently had the lock-in for Taproot, and I got a two-part question for you about that. Do you have any opinion on Taproot, and do you anticipate it will have a positive, neutral, or negative impact to the Lightning network?
Yeah, Taproot. So exciting to see it and glad to see it. Certainly enables Schnorr. You'll probably increase the block size a little bit, which is neither here nor there. It'll improve privacy and multi-sig addresses, et cetera, et cetera. It's a nice pushback against, you know, surveillance state, which sounds funny because I come from a compliance background, but you need to have that push-pull. And I can get into whole stories on all that kind of stuff and where that sits. But certainly from a Taproot perspective, what actually excites me most about it is, you know, what some clever developer is going to come up with. Because we don't even quite, and we understand it's a new, here it is, a whole new scripting thing, et cetera, et cetera. What will really be done with it? And some of the examples would be, you know, I was talking to Albert, our CTO, and we talk about all these kinds of things. And certainly it's like when Ethereum came out, nobody really thought about ERC-20 tokens and ICOs that will suddenly show up one day, or DeFi would come out. Whether you like Ethereum or not, it's irrelevant. Just simply technology came out of something because somebody was clever and they came up with it. So I'm very excited to see what some really smart people are going to come up with after it's you know, rolled out and being used. So that, I think it's a positive for sure. And we'll see. But I'd love to see the sort of the next phase for, if I had a BIP proposal, it would be preferential treatment for Bitcoin transiting between the main chain and Lightning Network. So you get preferential treatment in terms of fees. I don't know if that's practical or a reality, but that's a wish list. So I'll just put that out there in the universe.
That's good fiduciary responsibilities being being taken care of there on the podcast. I don't think you're wrong about that. I think that, and again, not to drag you back to plebland here, but one of the things that I have a problem with, and you know, I still do to some extent, but I think I've gotten better. And Len, you're probably in the same boat. I do need to be incentivized to use some of these new technologies, because if I look at the mempool and, you know, fee, you know, satoshis per byte and all these different things, usually if I want to move money, I just wait. And so these incentives you're talking about to make Lightning work and, you know, explode as far as Metcalf and whatnot, I think you're right about that. So what other things are you guys thinking of as far as bringing users on board in that regard?
Well, I don't think we're gonna entirely know. I mean, we do know some of the things that have to happen, but certainly ease of use and decomplicating the UI, making it so that people are going to start to use Lightning Network when they don't even know they're using Lightning Network. I know that, you know, Jack from Strike, they've got a model there that works because people just, it just provides the plumbing, and that's what you're going to see. Now, certainly more sophisticated users, if they're transmitting to Bitfinex or an exchange, they want to use Lightning Network. I think what'll happen where the initial sort of takeoff will happen is as all these exchanges get Lightning Network deposits, and the more and more are getting them all the time, you're going to see people doing, they're going to trade on one and transfer to another and try to do the arbitrage between it. And that'll set up a whole industry and start to really drive it, because there's a monetary incentive to really use that network at rapid fire pace. And from there, so it's still early days in terms of UI, but from what I've seen over my history, the next 2 years will just be, it'll morph very quickly. And once the base layer of a technology is set, and that's what's happening right now, it's almost, you know, you can see that it's matured a lot. And as you get more and more nodes and more and more connectivity, et cetera, then the rest of those phases will start to slot in there because it becomes practical and there's a motivation to do it. So we're not quite there yet, but we're almost there, you know.
So Sean, I noticed that your company Liquid purchased more than 60 Bitcoin, or you've accumulated more than 60 Bitcoin on your balance. That kind of makes you the Michael Saylor of the North. And one thing about me is I leave no stone unturned. And I took a look at your June 2021 investor presentation, and in there was a note that the accumulation of Bitcoin that you have is treasury reserve asset and for staking and liquidity. Are you able to discuss in depth about the staking aspect?
Yeah, so staking, we buy the Bitcoin because we want it for our treasury for sure. And BIGG also, when I was there, we started buying Bitcoin. And there's probably north of 300 Bitcoin on the balance sheet there. So I want it on the balance sheet. It is the future. Certainly for us, we need it because those opening payment channels and nodes, we need to be able to put that Bitcoin to work. I like to use the word staking because we deal with capital markets. We deal with people who may not be familiar with, oh, we need to take Bitcoin, open a payment channel, and put it to work, but you need the Bitcoin in order to, you know, effectively open the channel, et cetera. That's a very complicated, long way to say it's kind of like staking. It's table stakes. You have to have it. Yes, it's not like Ethereum staking, but effectively, if you are running a node and you plunk Bitcoin on it, you expect to earn, you know, you have enough channels, you're going to earn some yield. So you kind of are, it is kind of like Bitcoin staking, and it's just an easier way to try and explain what we're doing, because we really have two sets of people that we work with: the public market, capital markets, and then Bitcoiners. So it's, and it's, you get pure tech or pure markets, and maybe people are getting smarter and the bleeding is over there. But yeah, I've got, kind of took that and borrowed that word from a, just from a pure marketing standpoint.
That's a, I think that's a good comp. I mean, people would probably be upset. I know this is like the Bitcoiner podcast, but we try to be pragmatic here. So the next question is in line with the pragmatism, just a follow up there. What would you say to people who, you know, are more defensive than Len and I about the institutional regulatory capture stuff? Like, what's the elevator pitch to the hardest core Bitcoiner, you know, 2011, 2012 mined on their, you know, whatever GPU back in the day, and doesn't want to play ball with regulators, or doesn't want to play ball with law enforcement, even though, you know, in my view, this is everywhere and not going away. And we have a responsibility to make it pragmatic. So what would you say to those old timers who, you know?
Look, I remember this back in the internet days, and when the internet first came out, people started putting ads on, and ads were like this. If you put an ad on a website, that was sacrilege. My God, you tried to monetize the internet. What's wrong with you? You know, these internet maximalists were just the, and of course, without advertising, we wouldn't have the internet as we know it today. Good and bad, of course, and certainly it's gone, you know, a little obviously extreme. You know, from a pragmatic standpoint, it really depends. Like, yeah, sure, Bitcoin eventually, if you want like pure privacy, and you want to have that, it's going to become a lot more private when you and I are interacting direct payments to each other over the Lightning Network, et cetera, et cetera. Nobody cares. But if you're going to interact with like a Coinbase or a Netcoins or what have you, those, you know, it's like walking into a bank with $5,000 and wondering why they're collecting your information. Well, you know, keep it as cash in your wallet and spend it. If you're going to go to an institution that's regulated and under the watch of the government and then wonder why they're asking for your information, well, you know, grab a brain. But it is reality. And here's the thing. This reality will morph. This is still the early days where, you know, this kind of, you know, compliance software and all these things they've cracked open the market. And that, you know, that Bitcoin bug is now in everybody's head and is inside these institutions rattling around and they all want a piece of it. And so things are going to change, and it's going to, and Bitcoin will continue to thrive, and it's going to change. I mean, really, I've talked to institutions before. I was in New York. I was on a panel there giving a talk and talking to the banks. And I kept saying, and one of the things I was talking about, like, you know, where do you think your risk is? And you think your risk is compliance. You think your risk is all this kind of stuff. No, your risk is in action, because Bitcoin represents this new trust layer of the internet, represents this ability to do banking. And how long do you think it's going to be until Google and Facebook and Apple and all the lords and masters of the current internet wake up and decide, you know what? Hey, we can get into banking. You know what? We got phones to everybody. We got everybody's last mile solution, and we have a massive war chest. And more importantly, we have an army of developers born and bred into a culture of disruption who love nothing more than to take Wall Street and turn it on its head. And you know what's going to happen over the next 10 years? You're going to see a bunch of these banks either go under, merge, or they're going to embrace Bitcoin because they need to. And you're going to see all three happen. You'll see it over the next five to 10 years, even at least 5 years. And I've said this 3-4 years ago, it's coming. Your fight right now is, you know, you're in the pole position. And I guess the room was silent when I said this, but you're in the pole position because certainly they have, look, they're bankers. They understand banking. They have staff. They have clients. They have capital. Those sands are eroding away. And it's just the same as when the internet came along, e-commerce decimated every other aspect of life. You know, people are like, oh, invest in Kmart, invest in Sears because they own property. What? You know, and sure enough, we know how that's playing out. And partly this gets down to some of, you know, the way we look at it as a company, the way I look at the space is, and when you get into these places, I like to ask people, you have to answer almost the most very fundamental question. What is Bitcoin? What is it? And of course, someone puts a hand, oh, it's money. It's a payment network. It's a value system. Yes, but ultimately, what it actually is the trust layer to the internet. It is layer 8 to the 7-layer OSI model of the internet and represents a fundamental way to actually do trust, and it's going to affect the rest of the plumbing of the internet. And so that's actually the magic that Bitcoin solved, this ability to create trust. And we tried to do this in the 90s, and we failed. And when you start to look at Bitcoin as layer 8 to the 7-layer internet stack, you can start to envision the impact it's going to have. Money payment is just the first use case. Like email was a real first use case in the 90s. Mm-hmm. It's going to be so much more as it continues to morph over time, and we're starting to see it unfold. Very exciting stuff. And when I look at from a value standpoint, people are like, oh, why is Bitcoin worth X? Why is it worth, well, so much hashing rate if enough people believe? And forget all that. You know, that's all good and fine. Like, you have to have momentum. You have to have Mitkov's law. You have to have users. But ultimately, I remember back when 98, 99, they said, oh, the internet's probably worth about $180 billion. we think Microsoft and Yahoo could rebuild the internet for about $180 billion. Fast forward to 2004, Google's going public. This is after the .com. And the way we think the internet's worth, you know, $3 trillion or whatever it is. And it's gone up significantly. By 2010, it's worth, you know, 2009, it's worth $20 trillion. By 2020, what's the internet worth? What's it worth today? An unfathomable number. Okay, that's just the original seven layers of the internet. So what's layer eight, the layer that actually brings trust to the internet? What's that worth? We think it's only worth, you know, $600 billion? Are you kidding me? No, of course not. It's going to be worth significantly more because it's going to change the way that trust is done around the world. And it'll be across the Lightning Network because Lightning Network can handle the capacity and they'll still have, you know, layer one, et cetera, and it'll continue to scale. But it'll be very interesting as it plays out. I don't have all the answers, but you can see this is it. And that's our fundamentals as a company. That's what we believe and why we're in the space, because this is just a continuation of the revolution of the internet, and the world of finance is next in its path.
I'm the guy on this podcast who's like the guy who usually blacks out and gives you know, the old school of that movie where the guy just rips and destroys an answer. I'm pretty sure that was better than any riff I've gone off on this show. So thanks for coming back to reality there. Appreciate that. It's funny though. You mentioned like the, and we talked about this on the show too. Why is it that banks and financial institutions don't seem to understand that there's no moat for them? We've joked on the show before that like Google and Pfizer is a good example of this. Pfizer is never going to get into search and ads, but if Google wants to, with that war chest and the data they have, they could do healthcare, no problem. So what is it about banks, financial institutions that they just don't seem to really get it yet? Like, because you guys are talking to them, they're watching TV, they see it. So what is the disconnect for them, you think?
Certainly they have a lot of, it's a heavily regulated industry. So there's a lot of these kind of regulated moats around it. There's a bit of an old club to it as well in terms of deal flow and what have you and capital. But ultimately, every company is a tech company and they're no different and they're very much a tech company. So they have to adapt. Many won't. Some will be taken out. You'll see new crypto companies effectively become, I hate to use the term crypto banks, but it's not necessarily a bad term. It's just a different, you know, new and improved version of, you know, people need banking. People need financial services. Perhaps there's a more Bitcoiner term for that, but certainly it's going to open the doors. And more importantly, it's going to open the doors to stuff around the world. And we think about, you know, just Canada and North America and what's happening in our more established banking industry. And it's really, I mean, El Salvador, Philippines, and whatever else around the world. These are the, you know, over in Africa. And these are the places where there's so many people that are unbanked. And it's hard for us to imagine and fathom that they literally have no bank accounts and their bank account's now on their phone. And that is going to be truly impactful and be much more inclusion. It'll include a lot of people into the world's financial system and help drive the global economy forward as we open many doors for many other people. So I think it's really tough for all of us to get out of our heads, because we live in Canada. It's a wonderful country. You know, it has its problems like everyone else, but certainly we're not suffering and if we have a solid infrastructure. So that's what really excites me about what's going on here. And, you know, everybody likes to say, oh, we work for our company, we're here to change the world. And well, you know, they're making bottled water, maybe not changing the world. But here is actually an opportunity for not just companies, but people collectively in the Bitcoin community. Actually, you know, it is having impact around the world and it is opening the doors and it is changing. And it's very rare to have this kind of to be a part of something like that. And you don't get these tech cycles that often. And I tell the team, you know, enjoy this ride, because these tech cycles don't go on. You know, I look back and you say, okay, maybe back in 71, you had processors come out. But 10 years later, you had Apple and Microsoft born. And then within about 10 years after that, you had the internet show up. So you got this 20-year cycle. And then, of course, you know, 10 years after that, you had, you know, after the internet came out, you had Google come out. And then right around 10 years, in 2008, 2009, you had, or 2008, Bitcoin come out. So we're in that we're in that 20-year cycle. And so you only get these big, every 10 years, this big opportunity to really do massive, impactful things. And so here we are again. And I really think the Lightning Network's the driving force, because it has that ability to scale and transact at mass volume. And really the only thing holding Lightning Network back from a transaction standpoint, it's not block size, it's really network speed. And we're talking about just the speed of the internet. Well, there's really no limits to that. And of course, once we have more nodes around the world, there's more connectivity, et cetera, it'll continue to roll out. But I don't know where I'm going with all that. I'm just talking. So,
it's, hey, man, you're a bulldozer. You're running downhill. I'm ready to run through a goddamn wall after some of these, buddy. So just keep it up.
Very philosophical in the way he's approaching these answers. It's fantastic. And I don't mean to put you in a spot here, though. But where do you envision Liquid will be in 12 to 24 months? And you could just use whatever metric you want to use here.
What corporate stuff did I write down here to not get me in trouble with regulators? No forward-looking statements. That's a great question. So look, we will go as Bitcoin and the Bitcoin Lightning Network goes. Okay, we are tied to the fate of Bitcoin Lightning Network. And I tell investors, if you don't believe in either, if you know, there's three things you got to believe in: the management team, Bitcoin, and the products and services we're offering. And if you don't believe in any of those, then we're not your company. We have a great management team. We have a good team that's got experience, and we've been around before. We've had some track records, so we've been seasoned. But yeah, we feel very strongly that Bitcoin is continuing to morph out, Bitcoin Lightning Network, and we see bright prospects for our company, and we'll continue to push forward as a liquidity provider. And there's no question, it's in our deck. We talk about, you know, the growing by acquisitions. This is right from my playbook from BIGG, where we bought Netcoins, we bolted, you know, we created a bigger hold in the middle of a bear market. And we'll certainly look to that as when and where it makes sense. And if it makes sense, we will, no promises that we'll do anything like that. But yeah, to answer your question, 12 to 24 months, we see bright prospects for Bitcoin and Bitcoin Lightning Network, and that entails us. And we are right now the only public company involved in the Lightning Network, and we are all in.
I was going to ask, like, who is your really public facing, like, publicly traded competition? There isn't anybody.
No, there certainly isn't. And look, as Lightning, here's the prediction. Unfortunately, you know, in capital markets, you're going to start with early adopters or ones that are out in front like us. And then I think it's entirely possible as Lightning Network takes off and people look at our success, they'll try to emulate what we're doing. You might see another whack and them show up in the public markets. They all change their names from tire company to cannabis to Lightning Network or whatever. So beware, do your due diligence. And I'm not saying some of them won't succeed or not. That's not what I'm saying. But yeah, you're correct. We are the only place. And so if people want to be leveraged to the Lightning Network and its success, then we're the place. If they can't participate directly in the Lightning Network. Sorry, go ahead.
And anybody sitting on the fence that is still looking to invest, you present really good statements, you're really good answers to our questions. So it looks like that your company is growing and it's a great place to actually invest your money. So anybody listening and watching in, good place to invest in money is in Liquid.
Wait a minute. Are you on the payroll? What's going on here? Are you going to tell me something here? Are you getting paid for this? What's going on over here?
No, this is not financial advice. This is just my own personal observation.
Yeah, okay. Not financial advice. Most definitely not.
This check is out a our disclaimer at the front, Sean. Don't worry.
There you go. Yeah. Check out our website, liquidfintech.com, lqwdfintech.com, and you can look it up. But
Lightning is growing and it's exploding, and you guys are at the forefront of that. And I'll just go to my last question. Really, what is your favorite cryptocurrency and why is it Bitcoin?
Why is it Bitcoin? I think I kind of answered why is it Bitcoin, because, you know, my philosophy isn't Bitcoin. No, it's Bitcoin represents the ability to do trust and over the internet. I am, like, you know, 99.9% Bitcoin. I'm a tech person by trade, and certainly, you know, I wouldn't call myself a programmer. I program for when I want to do something for myself. I might write some scripts to call an API and insert some data calls into a database, but I wouldn't hire me for the team. To that end, what I'm saying is I like some of the technology. I kind of look at what Band Protocol is doing. I'm curious how they're doing this Oracle thing. That's more of just a curiosity as from a tech person. I don't consider it money or whatever, but I'm basically Bitcoin or nothing else. And it'll remain like that. So yeah, there's a lot of reasons. I think we kind of went over some of it. I don't know what else to add to that. Why Bitcoin only? But, you know, hash rate, Metcalfe's law, its momentum in the ecosystem. It doesn't mean other cryptos may not have value. May not necessarily be money, but they may present some kind of value, because we tend to confuse money and value. You know, everything and lots of things can have value, but doesn't make it money, or it's something that's we want to put our time and energy behind. But certainly, it's got the brand. And I like to tell people, look, Bitcoin is it. If Bitcoin doesn't make it, nothing's going to make it. There's no flipping. There's no other coin that's going to come along here and be like, oh yeah, we're better than Bitcoin, really? That Bitcoin that failed. Bitcoin won't fail. I don't believe that at all. Quite the opposite. And I'm all in. And I'm all in with BIGG. I got million. You can look it up. Yeah, I'm a massive shareholder, and I've been in Bitcoin a long time. And obviously founded Liquid, so I'm as bullish as it gets, and I won't be working at McDonald's.
Those memes are great, though. I love those memes.
They're really funny. They crack me up on. They just crack me up seeing that stuff. And there's I'm like, oh, that's pretty clever. So now we'll bright days ahead. We just got to keep going forward, and we'll come out the other side. Put our engineering hats on. We'll keep going, right?
We have one question that's not on the sheet. I have to ask it, Sean. It's going to be difficult. It may put a fork between you and your friend Mark. Who would win in a foot race? You look pretty svelte. I haven't seen bins from the neck down. So who do you think would win in a foot race? Let's say 40 yards, concrete. You guys pick your shoes.
Oh, I'll pick my shoes. I'll pick my Nike shoes. I would definitely win because I play floor. I mean, he's a cyclist, though, so I don't know. He might be...
So you're taking him out of his element there.
I got to take him out of his element. So I'll do the 40-yard dash. I play a lot of floor hockey, so I'll be quick.
At the very least, you'll elbow him in the head as you're going down. Get an advantage there.
I'll throw a private key at him, and that'll distract him for a little bit.
Love it. Love it. Sean, give us one more handoff. Where can people find you? Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, whatever. It's all you.
Yeah. Okay. So you can look me up personally on Twitter. It's Sean Anstey, all one. It's my Twitter handle there. Feel free to reach out. Our public company website, it's lqwdfintech.com. It's liquidfintech.com. It's LQWD on the TSXV. You can find lots of information there. We have investor relations, and anybody can. We do have an official Twitter handle for the company, LQWD Money, Liquid Money. And yeah, there's from there you can pretty much find anything you want. So we're an open book, and we're happy to we're here to support the community.
Len, are we done with them?
Yeah, I wish you all the best. I hope you great riches and lots of sats.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's great, Sean. Thanks for coming on, brother.
Cheers. All right, have a good day.